All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is October 9th, 2025. Happy $50 day. And the crowd goes wild. My favorite of the shiny has hit $50, a level last seen in 2011. Before that, 1980. Oh, my God. It just keeps going up, guys. The metals are looking fantastic here once again. So look, we're finally there. We finally reached that level. The 45-year cup and handle pattern, my cup runneth over, if you will. Is it gonna keep going? Are we gonna overflow? Probably, based on a couple of things I've seen this morning. Because besides the absolute price, the first thing I did this morning when I woke up, I take out my phone and I'm looking, and I keep refreshing my screen. Something's gotta be wrong. Because when I woke up this morning, silver futures were red in New York, and then I go and I look at spot silver, and it was up a buck. And I'm like, all right, something's not updating. Something's not wrong. I'm still half asleep. No, it was real. Silver has gone deep into backwardation. And I mean deep into backwardation. Way back. Like center field, it's out of here. Backwardation. We've seen this before. All right, for you guys who are like, WTF is Jack talking about? He's using finance bro terms. I don't know what backwardation means. Real quick, backwardation is when silver now becomes more expensive than silver later on, all right? We almost never see that. When you're trading in futures, you've probably seen this if you trade in options. The further into the future you go, the more expensive something gets because you have that element of time and risk is built in and it slowly decays back towards the now price as they near expiration. But every now and then, this weird thing happens where silver now becomes way more expensive than silver later. That is called backwardation, and that is indicative of a severe shortage developing in London, right? The spot price of silver, that is the price at the LBMA, the London Bullion Metals Association, the silver market, all right? The silver right now is over 50 bucks, but silver in the COMEX futures market, the front month contract in December is still $49. We've got almost a dollar difference here. Silver right now is worth a buck more. So why then isn't that gap closing? It shouldn't be like this. There's something wrong in markets. There is some extraneous or external force acting on the metals that is causing this dislocation because normal markets don't do this. And I think I know what it is. I've got Bob Coleman coming on the channel later today to talk about this, by the way. You're not going to want to miss that one. Bob has been so on the money for 2 years running now. So come back later this afternoon for that one. But what should be happening, metal should be getting on a plane right now in the United States and flying over to London where you can get another dollar an ounce for it. That should be happening, but it's not, or at least it hasn't happened up until this morning. Yesterday, silver was in backwardation. It was only a few cents. Those few cents was not enough to get that metal on a plane. Maybe a dollar is, maybe not. And by the way, there is a shortage developing in London right now. And that is not hyperbole. That is not like, you know, I got some guy who sells silver for a living on the channel talking about sell everything and buy silver because I'm selling it and I want my premiums higher. That's not what's going on here. All right. We have got silver in London is up big. The cost of leasing silver in London is up big. Usually it's like nothing point nothing percent. It is rising dramatically. The cost to borrow shares of the SLV ETF has gone up substantially. Like yesterday, it hit 11.5% at its peak. Oh my God, 11.5% interest for loaning out your shares. That is how short people are for some claim on paper metal here. Now it's like 9.5% this morning, but still very few shares available to borrow. The ETFs are gobbling up all of the paper silver that is out there. And then, of course, as ETFs are gobbled up, the ETFs create new shares, and those new shares gobble up the physical metal that is available in the London market. Retail traders are FOMOing into metals ETFs. It's happening in silver and gold here, and that is causing big shortages in London, and that is what's driving this big difference between the New York and the London prices. Now, typically that gap would close right away, but people are not sending their metal back to London. And I think the reason for that is tariffs, or the question of tariffs. You may recall earlier this year, there was a big EFP, or exchange for physical premium, where you could get a lot more money for your metal here in New York than you could in London, because people thought President Trump was going to slap tariffs on that stuff. And so the metal was put on planes and it flew into New York, millions of ounces of it. That has since reversed, or at least the price impetus for that move has reversed. But I don't think the metal flow has, because we still haven't gotten clarity on silver tariffs. There's still an open Section 232 investigation to determine if, for national security reasons, we need to put tariffs on silver bullion. And silver was also added to the critical minerals list, or the draft of the critical minerals list, a couple of weeks ago. So people are reluctant to cash in on that arbitrage opportunity, because for all they know, the silver might get tariffed next week. And then, well, you got to fly it right back here. So I think it is this question of tariffs that is really driving this big difference between the New York and London. It's this dislocation, broken situation in markets. You've got the overarching debasement trade continuing to drive gold higher, taking silver with it. The market has been crazy to watch this morning. I don't know how else this. I've never seen anything like this. Now, I haven't been doing this all that long, so let's put an asterisk there. I have seen silver briefly go into backwardation. I've never seen it this bad. Maybe some of you more seasoned metal traders out there can correct me on that. Have you guys ever seen a dollar backwardation in silver futures? Maybe we need to adjust that on a percentage basis, because silver is twice what it was a few years ago. So maybe that's making it look a little more severe. Either way, I like the shiny. All right. Oh, by the way, there is one more. We've given you the bull, right? The raging bull case. There's one thing. There's one technical indicator out there that is screaming top in silver. And it's also screaming top in gold. And I would be remiss if we didn't mention that. It's not a perfect technical indicator, but it is indicative that things have run too far too fast. We're going to look at that one today as well. Also, going on this morning, we've got more fallout from the First Brands collapse. Raystone, which is the factoring company that is laying people off because of the First Brands collapse, is wondering what happened to their $2.3 billion. $2.3 billion just poof, it's gone. We can't tell you what happened. Keep in mind, they didn't like lose it. They didn't make a wrong bet and the value went down. No, they lost it. Like, it's got to be around here somewhere. $2.3 billion. How do you lose $2.3 billion? I don't know. Maybe we get a former New Jersey Governor John Corzine on the phone. He was very good at misplacing billions of dollars, even though he never went to jail for it. Yeah, fraud, guys. That's how you lose it, okay? For those who are wondering, maybe some of you guys a little slow on the uptake this morning. It's early yet. Grab some coffee, lots of caffeine. That helps. Fraud. That's what's going on here. It is undeniable, verifiable fraud is happening with First Brands. And BlackRock smells blood in the water. Yesterday, we started to hear about Jefferies and this fund that Jefferies owns, this Point Bonita or Bonita Point Capital, whatever, had like a quarter of their assets under management invested with First Brands deliverables. And now BlackRock is leaking to the press. You know, according to people familiar with the matter, wink, wink, BlackRock wants their money out of this fund. It's almost like BlackRock's like, looks like these guys are going under. Maybe if we like slip to the press that we're pulling our money out, maybe we can engineer a run on this fund, cause that fund to collapse. Then we can buy up their assets, hire away their people, take in the funds, inflate our own fees. You know, if that happens, well, so be it. That's just the cost of doing business here. Guys, there was a lot of stories yesterday about this firm is exposed to First Brands. This firm is, that firm is, this business development company. We're only just scratching the surface on this story. And the only reason we found out about First Brands, in my opinion, is because Tricolor went bankrupt. So who is next in these cascading dominoes of counterparty risk and contagion stemming from the fraud in the auto space? And will it be contained to the auto space? I doubt it. Going on elsewhere this morning, China has expanded their rare earth element restrictions. That's after the U.S. expanded their semiconductor manufacturing restrictions. So trade war still going strong. We've got wind turbine manufacturer Ørsted is laying off 25% of their workforce this morning. More trouble in windmill territory. The German exports, the German economy slowing, and Germany's exports unexpectedly declined last month. I guess it shouldn't be unexpected because of the trade war and the tariffs, but that's hitting close to home. We've got a warning from Craig Fuller at FreightWaves about U.S. freight volumes in decline. The goods recession is underway. We've got Delta earnings this morning. Luxury travel doing pretty well because rich people are doing very well while everybody else struggles. Meanwhile, over at Spirit Airlines, yeah, about that. We've got Pepsi earnings. This is interesting. Pepsi just reported higher sales on lower volumes and cost cutting. That's interesting. Higher prices, less stuff moving, cutting people. Stag freaking flation is what that is. There's the stag and the flation, Jerome, for those unable to see it. Meanwhile, we've got Ferrari, another European automaker that committed a little too much to electric vehicles. They are now in the doghouse. Their stock is falling hard this morning. And we've got a story about Blackstone and dividend recapitalization. Oh, look, more finance buzzwords. Dividend recapitalization. Let me spell it out for you. That's how private equity strip mines businesses and runs them into the ground. And we're going to talk about that one at the end of the show. We have got a jam-packed show for you guys this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through the world of finance. And look, this morning, stocks are up in lieu of absolute catastrophe. Number go up 2.2 points higher for the S&P 500, basically trading flat today. The Dow is up 1 point, 0 point. Oh, there's 20 points. All right, the Dow basically flat as well. And the NASDAQ is down 21 points or 0.08%. We got stocks going a whole bunch of nowhere this morning. The DXY, meanwhile, slightly higher again, 98.91. That's higher by 7 basis points. We were over 99 yesterday. We peaked above that, but still the dollar has strengthened over these last few days off of worries about the French debt crisis and the Japanese stimmies weighing on the euro and the yen. Looking over at the bond market, we got yields are higher on the long end, lower on the short end this morning. Slight steepening of the yield curve. The 30-year Treasury is at 4.731. That is up not even 1 basis point. The 10-year is at 4.147. That's up a point and change. The 2-year, 3.597. That is up a point and change as well. And the 1-month is down a fraction of a point at 4.092. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, we're at $123,281 as priced on Coinbase, pretty much unchanged from where we were yesterday. Not a lot changing in Bitcoin. I would just add the warning, guys, as we sit here near all-time highs, 76 weeks after the halving, this is historically when something bad happens in Bitcoin. Don't know what it's going to be, just that this is the point on the calendar when it has historically happened. Be careful on leverage, as always. Looking over at the commodities board, there is our big moves in the shinies this morning. We've got spot gold is up another 10 bucks here, $4,051 for spot gold. That's up 0.25%. Meanwhile, December gold futures are at $4,070. That's basically unchanged on the day. Also important to note, guys, that the EFP premiums for gold is shrinking here. Silver is in deep backwardation, as we'll talk about in a minute, but gold is threatening to go there too. Possibly shortages of physical gold developing as well, although we still have about $19 worth of EFP premium for that one, for the yellow shiny. Now, take a look at silver here. This is the crazy thing this morning. First, spot silver blew right through $50. My God, look at this. Up $1.81 this morning, 3.7% higher at $50.67. Look at what we peaked at overnight, $51.24. Somebody let me know, is that an all-time high for silver? Did we get that high during the Hunt Brothers of 2011? I don't know that we went that high. That might be an all-time high for the shiny there. I would love to see it. Don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure that's what that is. Now, look at the big move here. Again, 3.7% higher for the XAG USD, for the spot price. That is your London price. Now look at what's going on in the COMEX in New York, the U.S. price in December, $49.67, more than a dollar cheaper silver in New York 3 months from now versus silver right now in London. All right, the Brits really want your metal, and they're willing to pay up to get it now. All right. At overnight, we hit a high of 49.95. Silver futures didn't quite get up to 50, but they are up 65 cents or 1.3%. That's only about a third of the move. Now, one other point, guys, a lot of people like, what happens at 50? That's been the big question a lot of people have been asking for a while now, because we have rejected this price severely the last two times we were here. Let's take a look at that. Why not? There's nothing really big. All right. Palladium is up again this morning. That's pretty much it. We're not going to go through the other commodities because historically, the last few times we were here, silver has rejected tremendously, right? 1980, look at the drop when we hit that level. 2011, look at the drop. And here we are now. All right. Yep. The cup and handle pattern, 45 years in the making. We're now there, guys. A lot of people have been fantasizing about this for years. We're there. Now, the last time we hit this level, or let's talk about 1980 when we hit this level, the gold to silver ratio was about 15, was the low there. It took about 15 ounces of silver to equal the price of 1 ounce of gold. That was in 1980 during the Hunt brothers. In 2011, at the peak, the gold to silver ratio hit 31. Right? It took 31 ounces of silver to make 1 ounce of gold. Right now, at the same price, the gold to silver ratio is 80, over 80. It takes 80 ounces of silver to make 1 ounce of gold. And the historical average over this time has been about 65, which means silver is still undervalued relative to gold, which means silver could go higher from here. It's still very cheap. Even at all-time highs, it's cheap because everything else has gone up so much. So it's hard to call a top. But there is one place that maybe this is a top, and I want to draw your attention down here in the lower right. All right, this is the RSI, or the Relative Strength Index. That's a measure of momentum. It's a technical indicator. Now, typically, an RSI above 70 indicates that something is overbought. RSI doesn't usually go above 70. When it does, it doesn't stay there long. It tends to indicate a reversal is imminent, or at the very least, it's going to trade sideways for a while. The RSI for silver right now is almost 82. That is like virtually unheard of, guys. Silver, you don't usually see an RSI in the 80s. And when you do, it doesn't stay there long. So, you know, if we zoom in here on this chart, let's set this back to daily candles here. Silver, the RSI at 82, and it's been here for a while. That is indicative that there could be a reversal coming. Now, let me just tell you the flip side here, guys. We have seen silver's RSI up around these levels before, all right? You see, we had the RSI was in the high 70s, low 80s, back in the middle of 2024. And okay, yeah, there were some little price corrections here and, you know, it traded sideways for a little while. But you'll notice, guys, even though the RSI went that high, the trend was still higher this whole time. So the RSI going this high, it is indicative that this run is due for a breather. At the very least, it should trade sideways for a little while. But it's also been in the 80s for several weeks. The RSI first hit $80 back at the end of September when silver had just recently broken $40, and now here we are over 50. So it could keep running. It's just indicative that it has largely run its course in the short term. Now, one more thing I wanted to point out, guys, with silver is the number of shares available to borrow and what it costs to borrow them. Right now, this is, what are we looking at here? Chartexchange.com for the SLV Trust. One of the ways you can get your hands on some silver, or at least hedge your price exposure, is by borrowing shares of the SLV, whether you want to short it or whether you got a short somewhere else. And for whatever reason, you need some paper ownership of silver, you're going to borrow some shares of SLV. Well, right now, you can't. Because even though it costs 9.62% to do that, that's the interest rate they charge you. Good God. There are zero shares available to borrow even at 9.6%, which means that number is going to go higher. Guys, there's a shortage. On paper, there is a shortage of physical metal in London. So the price could go higher here. This is pretty crazy to watch. Now, the other thing I'd mentioned, the RSI and silver, guys, and by the way, shout out to my moderator, Mish, who pointed this out to me yesterday. The RSI in gold is even worse, 87, the RSI in gold. Again, we've been here before. The RSI went into the high 70s, early 80s back in, when was that? Also middle of last year, early last year. And the price kept going up. It just traded sideways for a little while. So it doesn't necessarily mean it crashes inbound, but it is indicative that we could be near a top. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that run in the RSI. Also, look how high above the 200-day moving average gold is. One of the things I like to do when I just to decide, hey, has this move gone on too long, is I'll just make a little vertical line here connecting the current price to the 200-day moving average. And then I zoom out on the chart and I just drag this little line around and just see, have we ever been this high above our 200-day moving average? And the short answer is no, we haven't. All right. This move is more departed from the average than anything we've seen in several years. Doesn't mean it's over. It just means it's getting a little long in the tooth. Now, check out what Mohammed El Arian is saying on X this morning. This is pretty crazy. And again, when this is another possible indicator of a top, because a guy like Mohammed El Arian, not somebody who usually talks about gold. He's usually talking about the Fed and talking about stocks on CNBC. Now, this morning, he's saying, what if stock market gains were measured in gold instead of dollars? As John Authors notes, denominate U.S. stocks in gold rather than dollars, and they have actually been in decline since the dot-com bubble burst 25 years ago. Stocks elsewhere have done even worse. And on this chart, what he's showing is the MSCI All World Index and the MSCI U.S. Index. These are measures of stocks. And he's showing what the price has done in black. That's U.S. dollars. And you can see stocks have done nothing but go up over the last 20 years. But when you look at stocks valued in terms of gold, they've been going down this whole time. So has it been a good economy, or is it really just the currency becoming worthless? Because if you bought gold at the beginning of this century, you have vastly outperformed your peers who bought stocks. Hey, that ain't bad for a yellow pet rock, is it? Peter Schiff has been right all along. All right, let's shift gears a little bit to some credit risk. Another reason why gold may be doing so well here. First Brands creditor seeks investigation of vanished cash. Cash doesn't just get vanished. It gets spent. It gets stolen. It doesn't just vanish. Raystone, a provider of short-term financing that worked on deals for First Brands Group, is demanding the appointment of an independent examiner for the business after alleging late Wednesday that as much as $2.3 billion has simply vanished from the bankrupt auto parts supplier. The request for appointment of an independent examiner follows an October 2nd email exchange in which a bankruptcy lawyer for First Brands told Raystone that advisors don't know if the auto parts supplier has received an estimated $1.9 billion. The exchange followed First Brands' initial court hearing in which the company won access to more than $1 billion in emergency financing to prevent the business from collapsing. Now, listen to this email exchange here. This is between this lawyer from Raystone and the bankruptcy guys over at First Brands. First, do we know whether First Brands Group actually received $1.9 billion, no matter what happened to it? Raystone lawyer Emmanuel Grillo said in an October 2nd email, which was filed in bankruptcy court in support of its request for an examiner. Second, would you tell us how much is in the segregated accounts in respect to the factored receivables as of today? The answer from the First Brands restructuring lawyer was, number one, we don't know. And number two, $0. We don't know if we got that $1.9 billion or not. All we know is we've got nothing now. Gee, you think there might be some fraud going on at First Branch? You think just maybe something doesn't smell right here? $1.9 billion, don't just get up and walk across the street. It's all right, just went out for coffee and cigarettes. It'll be back. Don't worry. No, somebody stole it. Somebody embezzled it. Or what I think is they double pledged their collateral. They did receive that $1.9 billion, but they used it to pay back some other guy that they borrowed money from using the same collateral they used to borrow money from you, which means you are SOL. Meanwhile, Blackstone smells blood in the water, seeks cash from Jeffrey's fund exposed to First Brands, and then magically lets slip to the press that they want their money back. Blackstone has requested to pull some money it invested in a Jeffrey's Financial Group fund with large exposure to the trade debt of bankrupt auto parts supplier First Brands Group, according to people familiar with the matter. BlackRock and other investors, including Texas Treasury Safekeeping Trust, have been in talks to partially redeem funds invested with Point Bonita Capital, said the people who asked not to be named because they aren't authorized to speak publicly, but they were authorized to leak to the media. Point Bonita, a unit of Jefferies Leucadia Asset Management, has a $3 billion trade finance portfolio. $3 billion, put a pin in that. On Wednesday, Jefferies said that Point Bonita had $715 million invested in receivables owed to First Brands. Remember that $3 billion thing? $715 million was invested with First Brands. A quarter of a $3 billion portfolio tied up with one company, Paging Risk Management. While that means the fund is exposed to the credit risk of its customers, including Walmart and AutoZone, First Brands was responsible for directing payments to Point Bonita. Those payments stopped on September 15th, almost 2 weeks before the company filed for bankruptcy. First Brands special advisors are now investigating whether receivables may have been pledged as collateral more than once, Jefferies said in a statement. And again, multiple pledging of the same collateral is fraud, no matter what kind of buzzwords or soft language you use in the press. That is freaking fraud. It's just amazing. Remember how, like, when this happened, how quick they were to say, don't worry, it's an isolated incident. It's an isolated incident. And now one by one, all of these firms have this exposure, that exposure, this exposure. BlackRock wants their money back, a run on this fund. It's almost like the incident is not isolated at all. And really, the financial press is just sell-side research trying to restore calm while the big guys get their money out. Huh, how about that? Meanwhile, China expands rare earth restrictions, targets defense and semiconductor users. The trade war, yeah, that's still a thing. China tightened its rare earth export controls on Thursday, saying it planned to limit exports to overseas defense firms and semiconductor users and adding five rare earth elements to the list. The world's largest rare earth producer also added dozens of pieces of refining technology to its control list and announced rules that will require compliance from foreign rare earth producers who use Chinese materials. China produces over 90% of the world's processed rare earths and rare earth magnets. The 17 rare earth elements are vital materials and products ranging from electric vehicles to aircraft engines and military radars, also missiles. Exports of 12 of them are now restricted after the Ministry of Commerce added five. Those elements are holmium, erbium, thulium, europium, and how do you even pronounce that? Ytterbium, along with related materials. Foreign companies producing some of the rare earths and related magnets on the list will now also need a Chinese export license if the final product contains or is made with Chinese equipment or material. This applies even if the transaction includes no Chinese companies. So I'm just wondering how soon until we get our first levered 3X Ytterbium spot ETF trading. I'm sure there's somebody out there scrambling to make an Ytterbium ETF. It's just a sign of the times here, guys. I'll be honest with you. I have spent a lot of time looking at the periodic table, my engineering background and everything. I have to admit, I have never heard of any of these elements before. These are those like way down there ones, you know, like the skip over ones. All right, you got your noble gases, your alkali metals and all that other stuff. Holmium? Erbium? Never heard of it. Never heard meum. Also going on this morning, Ørsted to cut 25% of workforce to ride out wind sector woes. Let's not spend too much time on this because we've kind of beaten the Ørsted horse to death here, or the dead Ørsted horse. This is one of the biggest wind turbine manufacturers in the U.S. They just raised a bunch of money a few weeks ago issuing new shares. They are behind some of those big canceled offshore wind projects here in the U.S., the ones that are like on again, off again in court as the Trump administration has canceled them, and then other companies have challenged it in courts, and one judge said this, another judge said that. It's still pending. Ørsted is laying off people. They will finish up some of those projects that are in limbo in the States, assuming they get approved. They'll finish those up. They're pulling out of the U.S. They're going to focus on offshore wind in Europe. I'm guessing we're probably going to hear more about problems at Ørsted here. A lot of things going wrong in the renewables industry here beyond just what's going on here in the U.S. Now, elsewhere, we've got more trade talk this morning. German exports unexpectedly drop as shipments to the U.S. sink. It wasn't a huge drop, but they were expecting an increase. German exports unexpectedly fell for a second month as the value of shipments to the U.S. plunged to their lowest level in almost 4 years amid President Donald Trump's tariff campaign. Total exports declined 0.5% in August from the previous month, the statistics said, That compares with a 0.2% gain that was predicted by a Bloomberg survey. Shipments to the U.S. retreated for a fifth consecutive month. So we're seeing some slowdowns in trade. Not terribly surprising, although they're saying they didn't expect this. Now, check out this one from Craig Fuller on X this morning. By the way, Craig's founder and CEO of FreightWaves. He's been on the channel before. He does a very good job tracking the logistics market. It's probably time we bring him back on the channel here to talk about this. He's saying the goods economy continues to collapse. This table looks at the top trucking markets and their volumes month over month. Auto and industrial chemicals are in major trouble. Auto, not surprising. See also First Brands, Tricolor, German exports to the U.S. There's a lot of car issues there, a lot of car parts there, engines, things the Germans make. So I'm not surprised to hear autos, industrial chemicals, that's a new one. Keep an eye on that. And look at some of the numbers here month over month. Houston, Texas, volume and freight down 11.2%. Kansas City down 18.5%. We've got Fresno, California is actually up 1.7%. That's the lone green number in the month over month numbers here. Bowling Green, Kentucky down 22%. Wilmington, North Carolina down 14%. The goods economy is in recession, guys. Outside of government spending and circular accounting and AI, everything else is slowing down here. Shout out to Craig Fuller from FreightWaves at Freight Alley on X. You should be following him if you're not already. And we got a couple of earnings reports this morning as well. Delta sees robust demand going into 2026 amid premium focus. Pockets of the luxury economy continue to do well here. Delta Airlines predicted continued strong demand into next year after reporting better than expected earnings for the third quarter, helped by leisure travelers splurging on premium seats and a rebound in corporate travel. The carrier had third quarter adjusted EPS of $1.71. That's higher than the $1.56 average estimates. Full year EPS will be about $6, also ahead of the analyst consensus, while Delta is saying it's well positioned to deliver top line growth, margin expansion, and earnings improvement next year. And then we got this quote here from their CEO. Our customer is financially in a good spot. That's from Ed Bastian. We're not seeing any pullback in demand. Now, contrast that with what's going on at Spirit Airlines, where there's freaking brawls breaking out on the planes. They're laying off all their helpers. The company filed for bankruptcy twice in 1 year. You can see the bifurcation in the economy here. The luxury guys are still doing all right. My AI stocks are doing really well, and I got my stimmy cash from the government, and I embezzled $50 million in PPP fraud so I can take an extra vacation. Everybody else is left with the inflation resulting from those things, and they're broke. So Delta is the beneficiary here. That airline is up 6.5%, trading at $60.71, up $3.50 this morning. Meanwhile, these Pepsi earnings are pretty crazy here, and they are screaming stagflation. PepsiCo earnings top estimates as international markets fuel sales growth. Pepsi on Thursday reported quarterly earnings and revenue that beat expectations as international growth offset another quarter of declining volume in North America. Shares rose nearly 2% in pre-market trading. Net sales rose 2.6% to $23.94 billion, stripping out acquisitions, divestitures, and Forex. Pepsi's organic revenue increased 1.3%. So the company took in more money here. However, Frito-Lay and Gatorade owner is still seeing softer demand for its products. Pepsi's worldwide volume for both food and drinks fell 1% during the quarter. The metric strips out pricing and foreign exchanges. So they took in more money, but they sold less stuff. How does that happen? Well, in particular, Pepsi has struggled in its home market in recent quarters, leading the company to invest back into its brands and to explore cost-cutting measures, see also layoffs. We also expect our North America business to deliver improved growth and profitability trends as we aggressively reduce cost, accelerate innovation, and further sharpen our price pack architecture initiatives. Let me translate that for you. We're going to raise prices, cut production, and cut people. And that's how we're going to improve our bottom line. And let's see. Higher prices and lower employment. That sounds a lot like stagflation, doesn't it? Huh. Pepsi Foods North America, which includes brands like Doritos, Quaker Oats, and Pearl Milling, reported that its volume fell 4% in the fiscal third quarter. They are selling a lot less stuff, but they're raising their prices and they're firing their people. And so Pepsi is actually doing pretty good this morning. The stock is up 1% on this news, $140.21 for Pepsi. Now, remember when I said the luxury market was doing good? Yeah, about that. Ferrari shares fall 16% as guidance disappoints, on track for the worst trading day ever. Another European automaker is in the doghouse this morning. This time it's Ferrari. So much for that luxury market strength. Shares of Ferrari plunged as much as 16% on Thursday after the luxury car maker updated its full year and 2030 guidance and scaled back its electrification ambitions. Another automaker that went a little too batshit crazy for electric vehicles. Now they regret it. Maybe listening to Cathie Wood was a bad idea. And now it's costing them money to walk back those plans. Analysts were disappointed by the new guidance, saying it fell short of expectations. The Maranello, Italy-based sports car manufacturer said its Capital Markets Day event that it expected net revenue of at least 7.1 billion euros or $10.7 billion this year, up from a previous forecast of more than $7 billion. Analysts at Citi said in a research note that Ferrari's guidance falls below our lower growth case estimates for our CMD preview and reflects conservatism for management, we think. They added, given guidance, albeit conservative, implies limited operating leverage through the coming cycle. We think there is some risk to both consensus earnings per share and multiples near term. In other words, Ferrari disappointed with their forecast, and people are dumping the stock like all get out. The stock is down almost 12% this morning. Let's see. This is Ferrari shares priced in U.S. dollars, $421.84, down 57 bucks this morning. And to wrap up the show, we got to talk about this one. Blackstone's Clarion seeks £1.1 billion private credit loan. And I like this story because this story encapsulates how private equity strip mines companies and runs them into the ground, usually leading to bankruptcies and job losses. And at the same time, they're strip mining retirement accounts because they're using private credit to do it. Blackstone's Clarion Events is in talks to borrow £1.1 billion, that's about $1.5 billion, from private credit lenders that will be used to fund a dividend and refinance existing debt, people with knowledge of the matter said. All right, Blackstone is not borrowing money to make improvements in the company or to build a new factory or to make them a leaner, meaner. No, they're borrowing money to pay themselves and to pay back the other money they borrowed probably the last time they paid themselves. This is how they strip mine and loot companies. Blackstone is still evaluating long-term options for the business, including a sale, which could take until next year to complete, said the people who asked for anonymity discussing private matters. It started plans to sell the company, which organizes exhibitions over the summer, in a so-called dividend recapitalization. The sponsor adds debt to a company to fund a payout to itself, boosting leverage, while at the same time making that company less efficient because now its debt service costs go up, ultimately leading to the demise of the company. This dividend recapitalization, this is how private equity strip mines everything from Clarion summer festivals to your community hospital with these dividend recapitalizations. And they're doing it by borrowing money from private credit, which remember, guys, there is this big effort on Wall Street to put private credit IOUs into your 401k and your IRA. So they're strip mining companies and your retirement at the same time. Isn't that just lovely? Oh, I just love these private credit parasites. That's what they are, guys. They are parasites. They're not investors. They're not builders. They are blood-sucking vampires who take productive businesses, buy them with other people's money, take everything out of them that they can extract, pay themselves, run them into the ground, lay off the employees, stiff their lenders, and then move on to the next fertile ground. They're like locusts. They are financial locusts, and this is a perfect example of it. Oh, these guys, gotta love it. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Steve Woitis, who says, ag not at an all-time high adjusted for inflation. Eh, very good, meaning we could see one heck of a run. Steve, that's an important thing right there, right? Now, 1980 is probably not the best comparison, right? The move in silver in 1980 was the Hunt brothers cornering the market. They rigged the market to destroy the Hunt brothers and basically just ruin them by changing the rules mid-trade. It's not really a good example because that was just like leverage run amok. The 2011 move, though, that is comparable and adjusted for inflation. Back to 2011, silver is nowhere near an all-time high. That is an excellent point, Steve Boydus. And it's another feather in the cap for higher silver prices from here. Again, that RSI, it's getting way overstretched. All right, we're due for a pullback. We're due to trade sideways. Let's not be surprised if we see the price of silver drop a few bucks here in a hurry. It could very well happen with an RSI at 82, was it, or 85? That being said, all the things taking silver prices higher, they're still there. They're getting worse. The shortage in London, the monetary debasement, the physical recklessness in Washington, all things that could drive silver prices higher from here. Thank you very much, Steve, for supporting the channel. Gordon Guanu, what's going on, brother? He says, Werewolf Hunter's going to raise their rates soon. Oh, them silver bullets getting more expensive due to the rising cost of ammunition. Warning shots will not be issued. Absolutely, sir. Thank you very much, Gordon Guanu, for supporting the channel. Werewolf Hunters. Gotta love the stuff that comes out of the melon heads in the morning. Nashville Pasta Man says Blackstone on the other side of no disbursement. No disbursement. Are we talking about the BREIT, the Blackstone Real Estate Investment Trust that went like 18 months while freezing withdrawals? Is that what you mean by no disbursement? I'm not sure what the no disbursement is specifically mentioning here, but guys, Blackstone is the biggest private equity firm in the world, not to be confused with BlackRock. And they're, what they're talking about there, the dividend recapitalizations, it's a perfect example of how these guys just destroy. They're not producing anything. These dividend recapitalizations, right? Most of the time when you have Wall Streeters defending what they do, they're like, oh, we're investors. We provide capital and access to businesses that want to expand and create jobs. And sometimes they're being truthful when they do that, right? Sometimes you IPO a company because you want to raise money to reinvest it back in the company and grow your company and then we all prosper. Yay. Private equity does not do that. Private equity takes and destroys. That's what Blackstone is doing with those Clarion events. It is not growth. It is not investment. It is extraction at the expense almost always of their lenders and their employers. Employees, I'm sorry. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man Randy Savage says, you guys are great to wake up to. Thanks, Jack, for all the info, making me money. Well, congratulations, Nacho Man. Enjoy the gains while we got them, guys. Look, things have gone really well for the metals crowd these last couple of weeks. It's not going to last forever, right? Let's be ready for that price slam. We know it's coming at some point. How severe, how soon, we don't know. Nothing goes up in a straight line forever. Let's be ready for that. Be careful on leverage, all right? When we get moves like this, people tend to be like, oh, let's FOMO into zero DTE call options. Max out my leverage. I'm going to make 10x my money in one day. That's where money goes to die. So resist the urge to do that, even though if you've done that for the last few days, you made a lot of money. Again, it could turn on a dime. Thank you very much, Nacho Man. Glad you're doing well, sir, and thank you for supporting the channel. Jeef, what's going on? Mic check, 1, 2. Is this thing on? Uh-oh. What's going on? Is our sound messed up? I'm seeing a little bouncing needle thing on my soundboard. I think we're pretty good. Sometimes this happens on the live streams, guys. Just refresh if that ever happens. I've had a couple of comments from people saying there's no sound, and then they refresh the window and it works. But yeah, sorry. Sorry if that's going on. Thank you, Jeef, though, for being a Melonhead member for 17 months. And yes, this thing is on. Mark Prescott. Hey, a new Melonhead. Welcome to the Melonheads, Mark. Thank you so much for supporting the channel, sir. Just a reminder to you Melonheads, all members get one free super chat a month. Use that, and I will read and respond to your questions on the air. Welcome, Mark, and thank you, sir. Chuck G says, did you know the Audi e-tron electric car dropped from $120,000 to $50,000 in value depending on the year made? Well, I can tell you guys, depreciation with electric vehicles. All cars are rapidly depreciating assets, right? That's one reason why there's a severe comeuppance in store for the auto finance world. They've been trying to hide repossessions for years by not selling the cars they repossess and not booking the losses. But while they've been sitting on those cars, those assets have been going down in value rather rapidly. Now, an internal combustion vehicle depreciates very rapidly. An electric car depreciates even faster than that. The limiting factor, more important than mileage. I read this the other day and it's pretty profound. Mileage doesn't matter so much with electric vehicles. It's how healthy is the battery. Was it in a cold climate? Did the guy you know, only use 1% a day and then charge it every night. And when you charge a battery without fully draining it, you know, you shorten its life. Battery health is the limiting factor in the life of an electric vehicle. And there's really no accurate, to my knowledge, no easy way to measure it. And since that's a big question mark, used electric vehicles are just not worth very much money. And that's a pretty crazy example there. $120,000 to $50,000 in value. Now, you're saying value, so I'm assuming we're talking depreciation here. That's not the price change, is it? Like a new model was $120,000 last year. Now a new model is $50,000. I don't think that's what you're talking about here. That'd be pretty wild. But I can see that in depreciation. Abso-freaking-lutely, Charles. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. And all right, I'm going to try this one. Prashant Parashar. Mr. P. Thank you, Mr. P, for supporting the channel. He says, when is the end game for fiat? Or it's never. It's just an inflation. It's just a inflation and continue with fiat. So when is the end? Look at a chart of the dollar's value over time, and it looks like it's already the end, right? Go all the way back to when the Fed started in 1913 and what a dollar bought you, and look at what it buys you now. It's already gone to nothing in 1913 terms, all right? So, you know, this fiat currency can continue losing value in perpetuity forever without actually reaching zero, right? We could get to the scenario of the trillion-dollar bill, a.k.a. Zimbabwe. We're not going to go there overnight. We're not going to go there anytime soon. We are on course for that, though. We are on pace to get there at some point. If they keep printing money in ever-increasing increments, we're going to get there. So fiat doesn't really have an end game. There is no goal. It's an asymptotal relationship. We never quite get to zero, but we will continue approaching it on the fiat debasement, which is alive and well, guys. But you know what? In the meantime, enjoy that $50, guys. It's here. We've been theorizing about it for a while. You know, I said earlier this year, I said, you know, we're right around that $30 level. If we break above the low 30s, there is like no air between low 30s and $50. We're going to go there in a hurry. That is exactly what happened. Now we're here. Now what? I don't know. Watch that RSI, guys. We're due for a pullback or at least a trade sideways, but all the things taking this market higher are still in place. And oh my God, I just realized there's more of these. I almost did my sign off. Silver Rebellion. What's up, you rebellious SOBU? He says, keep stacking the shiny. Yes, sir, can do. I got my America flag bar right here. I like the shiny. That's the one downside to $50 silver, guys. It's getting harder to stack that stuff, man. You got to dig a little deeper if you want to keep that pile growing. But, you know, I'm still going to. I can tell you the physical stackers have not FOMO'd yet. All right. The stackers are still net sellers, not as much as they were 2 months ago. I am noticing premiums are starting to creep up a little bit here. Coin shop dealers are talking about a few more buyers coming in the door. So we are seeing some buying enthusiasm return very slightly, but we're still way biased to the sellers in the physical bullion market. That being said, on paper, there is an extreme shortage developing in London as paper traders FOMO into ETFs, driving those prices higher. I like the shiny Silver Rebellion. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Chuck G is back again. The MSRP, I believe, was $120,000. We're talking about that electric vehicle again. That didn't include any add-ons. And devalued by that much. Yeah, that is a big drop. That's a lot of depreciation to eat, because if, let's say you put like 10% down or whatever, you still owe over $100,000 on a car that's now worth $50,000. What do? You stop paying that thing and you let it get repoed. That's what you do. And that's why so many cars are getting repoed here. Used electric vehicles, rapidly depreciating assets. Thank you very much, Charles, for that clarification and for the support of the channel. And thank you, everybody, for supporting the channel this morning and for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Enjoy that $50 shiny and that $4,000 yellow shiny. Where do we go from here? Nobody knows. Look for that interview with Bob Coleman later today. Thank you so much for the super chats and the support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon. You guys rock. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.